Mary loves an audience, and she's got a very a nice audience here this morning listening on the radio and outside in our studios. Mary, it's so good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm looking forward to telling stories, as usual.
Mary Morgan Smith is a gifted storyteller. You've been doing this
I'm very superstitious, so as soon as you say that, I think, oh, Lord, I'm going to forget everything. I won't remember my name.
Mary hasn't told many stories, and she's just here to try it out. Does that sound better?
It's a good story.
Well, I'm going to turn it over to you, and, you know, you can't, if you're driving, you shouldn't close your eyes, but if you're still in bed or if you just need a moment to relax during this busy time of the year, there's nothing like a story, whether you're a kid or an adult. So Mary Morgan Smith, in just a moment, is about to share with you the first of a few stories she'll bring this morning.
Okay. The first story I'm going to tell is not actually officially a Christmas story. It's a story I like to tell because it reminds me of Christmas when I was a kid. Because my grandmother was a baker. Her regular cooking was not too good, but she was a wonderful baker, and that's involved with this story. It's a story from Appalachia called Sody Sally Radis. A grandmother and grandfather lived in a small cabin. This was a long time ago, and their grandson and granddaughter were visiting. Grandma said that she was going to bake biscuits, and everybody got excited about this. Grandfather got excited, the boy got excited, the girl, even their little pet squirrel that they had got excited when he heard they were going to have biscuits, because her biscuits were renowned. So she got out her old crockery bowl, and she got out her flour and her buttermilk and some other things, and then she realized she was missing a key ingredient. She was missing Sody Sally Radis. Now, when I'm in an audience I've got before me, I usually say, does anybody here know what Sody Sally Radis is? And sometimes people do, mostly they don't. But then I say, it's still something that you use every day with a different name. It's probably in your kitchen in a little gold box. And it's really important for baking. It's baking soda, Sody Sally Radis. So Grandma went to get the Sody Sally Radis for the biscuits, and there were no biscuits there. She was no Sody Sally Radis. She knew exactly what to do. She said to her grandson, she said, boy, here's a quarter. This was a long time ago. Here's a quarter. You go on down to town, and you go to the general store, and you get me some Sody Sally Radis, and you bring it straight back here. You do not stop anywhere. You do not do anything else. You just come straight back here so I can finish my baking. You got that, boy? And he said, yes, ma'am. And he took off and started going to town. He was walking, and he was walking. It was a fairly long walk. And he had to cross a creek at one point. And when he crossed the creek on the bridge, he sort of stopped in the middle because something seemed sort of odd, but he couldn't quite figure out what it was. Nothing happened, so he kept going. He got to town. He got to the general store, and he said, sir, my grandma sent me for some Sody Sally Radis. Here's a quarter. And the general storekeeper looked at him and said, is she baking biscuits? Oh, yes, sir, she is. Well, you tell her to keep me a biscuit for good because I love her biscuits. And then he got the Sody Sally Radis, which was basically loose in a barrel, and he put some into a little poke sack. And that's another term you don't hear too often, but you probably would recognize one because it's like a little paper lunch bag. So the boy had his little poke sack, and he rolled it up, and he headed home, and he was making good time. And then he came back to that creek and the bridge. And when he started off the bridge, it still seemed very, very strange, and then he found out why, and it was because a bear came up from underneath the bridge. And the bear said, who's that walking across my bridge? And the boy just looked at him and said, it's just me. I just got my granny's Sody Sally Radis here. And the bear said, well, it's lunchtime. I'm hungry, and I'm going to eat you up. And he grabbed the boy and swallowed him. So the boy didn't get back home. Meanwhile, back at the house, Grandma was waiting for her Sody Sally Radis. Usually her grandson was very obedient, but she thought, oh, something's got into that boy now. I don't know what he's doing, but he's not coming home. So she looked at her granddaughter, and she said, girl, I need you to go after your brother and you bring him back here. He's supposed to come straight back here. He's in deep trouble now. If you need to, drag him by the ear. But you bring your brother back. Now, anybody who has a sibling probably knew exactly how that girl felt. She was excited. Oh, her brother's going to be in trouble. Okay. So she started off really fast, trying to figure out where she was going to find him, and then she was going to drag him back. Well, she got to that creek, and she got to the bridge. And no sooner had she gotten onto the bridge than up rose that great, huge bear. And the bear said, "Who's that walk across my bridge?" The little girl looked at the bear. He was a pretty big bear. And she said, "It's just me. I'm just looking for my brother. Have you seen any boys around here?" "Oh, a little kid about so high with a poke sack?" "Sounds right." "Yeah, I saw him. I ate him. And I'm going to eat you too." "Oh." And he did. Well, back at the house, Grandma's waiting, and both kids are, "This is not good. This is not right. They're never bad." But she said to her husband, "Dear, I know you're waiting for the biscuits, and I can't make the biscuits until somebody gets back here with that sooty saleratus. So will you please go and get the kids and bring them back here so I can finish my baking?" And her husband really loved her biscuits, and he said, "Oh, yes, I'll be happy to do that for you, dear." And he started walking. Well, you have a pretty good idea of what's likely to happen next. He got to the bridge, and when he got to the bridge, up rose that great, huge bear. And the bear looked at him and said, "Who's that walking across my bridge?" The old man said, it's just me. I'm looking for my grandkids. You seen any kids around here?" "Little boy about so high with a poke sack? Little girl about so high?" That sounds like them, yes, sir." "I ate them, and I'm going to eat you, too." "Oh." And he did. So there's Grandma back at the house. Now even her husband's not coming back. What is going on in town that's keeping everybody there? Well, if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. So she got her shawl, and she went out the door, and she headed off to town to see if she could find her family. When Grandma got to the bridge, up rose that great huge bear. And the bear said, "Who's that walking across my bridge?" And Granny said, "It's just me. I'm looking for my husband and grandkids." The bear said, "Oh, little boy about so high, poke sack, little girl about so high, old man about so high?" And she said, "Yeah, that sounds like them." "I ate him, and I'm going to eat you too." And he grabbed her and swallowed her down. Oh, I just killed off everybody, didn't I? No, I didn't. There is somebody to come to save the day. And the somebody to come to save the day is that little pet squirrel they had. He was running back and forth on the mantelpiece going, "Where is everybody? I don't know what's going on here. I want some biscuits too." So he decided to go after everybody, and he jumped off the mantelpiece and skittered out the door and headed off down to town. When he got to the bridge, no sooner had he put one furry little paw on that bridge than up rose that great huge bear. And the bear said, "Who's that walking across my bridge?" The squirrel looked up and said, "Me. I'm looking for my family. You seen anybody around here?" "Yeah. Old man, old woman, little boy, little girl." "Yeah, that sounds like them." "Yeah, I ate him, and I'm going to eat you, too." "No, you ain't." The squirrel did not like that idea. So the squirrel did what squirrels do. The squirrel ran away, and he was a fast little thing. Bears can run pretty fast, too. And so the bear took off after the squirrel. The squirrel did what comes naturally to squirrels. He skittered up a tree. Bears can climb trees. So the squirrel was running out of tree, and the bear was still climbing. And so the squirrel looked around, and he saw another tree nearby. And again, he did something squirrels do all the time. He jumped from the tree he was on to the one next to it. And then he looked back at the bear and went, "Na-na-na-boo-boo," which was not a good thing to do. But the bear saw what the squirrel did and said, "Well, if that squirrel with his little bitty legs could jump from this tree to that tree, well, with my big, fine, strong legs, I can do it too." This is where I usually stop for a short physics lesson about gravity. Squirrels are very light, and so it's very easy for them to go from one tree to another. Bears are not light. And so the bear tried. He did his very best. But he got about halfway between trees when gravity kicked in. And The bear fell and broke wide open. And out came Grandma, Grandpa, little girl, little boy. This boy was still holding that Pokesacosodes saleratus. Now, Grandma had been a Girl Scout in her youth, so she was prepared for everything. And she sat down on a log, and she said, "Bring that bear over to me." And they hauled the bear over to her. She pulled out her sewing kit, and she stitched that bear back up together. And then she smacked him upside the head and said, "Bear, wake up." And the bear looked around and said, "What happened?" And the woman said, "You got beat by a squirrel. And we don't like people who go eating people around here. We don't like bears that go eating people around here. So I think it would be very good for you to leave this area and never come back. And if I hear you try to eat another person, I'm going to send the squirrel after you." Well, the bear took off. Never was seen in that area again. The family, they went back to the house with the Sodi saleratus. Grandma baked her biscuits. And when the biscuits came out of the oven, they were high and golden brown. Oh, they smelled so good. And she broke one open and put a pat of butter on each side and a little honey on it. And that one she gave to the squirrel. And that's a story called Sodi saleratus.
And that is Mary Morgan Smith. What a great story. And I was concerned that all the characters were gone for a minute, except for the bear.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Very often when I'm in a group with kids, I'll ask the kids if anybody could think of somebody who could come and save them. And usually one or two will come up with a squirrel. What really is bad is when I'm telling the story and I forget to mention that there's a squirrel.
Uh-huh.
But that happens. So, you know, I forgot to tell you, they had a squirrel and the squirrel did this.
Well, I also had this vision of the bear lying down in the hot sun and like the acid in his stomach or something mixing with the Sodi saleratus, and suddenly he rose and rose and rose and burst open.
I like that.
Did you write that story?
Oh, no. No, Sodi saleratus is a very old American folktale, and it is probably one of the most popular folktales told in the United States. But everybody tells it a little bit different.
How did you come by it?
About 40-some years ago, I was working at Prince George's County Memorial Library System in Maryland, and I had to go out storytelling with another librarian. And I heard her tell it, and I thought, oh, that's fun. And since then, I found it in a lot of different locations. When the other librarian told it, she included a song in it. My singing is not really that great, so I do other things, like physics lessons.
What a great story. Mary Morgan Smith is a librarian. She's been telling stories for many, many years. Mm-hmm. Once a librarian, always a librarian, right?
Yeah, I'm retired now, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so much. Anybody who wants to know what it's like being retired? It's wonderful.
That's nice.
Yeah, you broke, but it's wonderful.
My favorite description, my old friend Pat Selesky, Ricky's friend too, once told a man who retired, "You look really good. You look ironed." Because all the wrinkles had disappeared from his face. And I always loved that turn of phrase that she used.
I think that's a very good one. Accurate, too.
Are you... telling stories out and about
actually,
places?
That's one thing I'm hoping to do more of. I had some medical problems this past year, so there are a lot of things I couldn't do. But I love going out and telling stories to pretty much any age, which is a little different than a lot of storytellers.
How can people – they certainly can reach you through us.
I would be delighted.
Yeah.
They can definitely look at my website, which is marymorgansmith.com. And that's MaryMorganSmith, no dots, no lines, no nothing else, just marymorgansmith.com. Or you can Google me, and that'll probably come up. And my contact information is there, too.
Well, that's terrific. And you can find what a treat she might be for a birthday party or a special event of some sort. Now, I know you've got a few others. We didn't get a chance to really... we were talking, but we didn't talk exactly about your set list, so to speak. Do you have a couple? Would you like to do a few more?
Mm-hmm. I've got one that is actually a German story that probably a lot of people have heard the title at the very least, and they may have seen like a cartoon variation on it. But it's a Christmas story, and it's called The Shoemaker and the Elves. Long time ago, there was a shoemaker who was a very good shoemaker. But somehow, for no reason, no fault of his, that's for sure, he fell on hard times and became very poor. And the day came when all he had was money to buy leather to make one pair of shoes. And he was very sad. He went and he cut out the shoes, cut out the leather, and he decided he would wait and put together in the morning when she was fresh and could see clearly. So he went to bed. The next morning, when he got up, he went to his workbench to start stitching those shoes together. And they were already there, already made up as shoes. Complete, perfect. And he looked very carefully at them. The stitching was absolutely fabulous. And he looked around. He couldn't figure out who on earth it was that did that for him, but he wasn't going to turn it away. So he took the shoes and he took them to the market, and they were sold very quickly for more money than he would normally charge for shoes. And he had enough money that he could go and he could buy enough leather to make two pairs of shoes. And he thought, oh, this is great. So he went home and he cut out shoes. And again, he decided to wait until the morning to put them together. He went to bed. The next morning when he got up, by golly, there were two pairs of beautifully made shoes sitting there on his counter. Now, for me, I'd start really wondering what was going on, but apparently he wasn't that curious a person, because he didn't. He just decided to enjoy what he was getting, and every time he got more shoes, he could sell them. He would buy more leather and bring it home and cut it out, and by golly, the next morning, there would be beautiful shoes there. Depending on what he cut out, they had boots, they had sandals, they had Oxfords, they had every cut. I don't think they had high heels, but I don't guarantee they didn't either. So he was doing very well. And as time went on, he and his wife became not just not poor anymore, but they became prosperous. And then they actually became wealthy. And they started talking one day. It was close to Christmas. And they said, you know, we don't know who's doing this for us, but we really should, and we should find a way to thank them. And it's coming up on Christmas, so let's see what we can do. So that night, he cut out all the leather, put it on the table, but instead of going to bed, they left a little candle lit, and then they went and they hid behind some clothes that were hanging on the wall. And they waited. Long about midnight, they saw two little men, only about 5-6 inches tall, come in, jumping around and tumbling and laughing and having a great time. They didn't have any clothes on, but they were having a great time. And then they sat down and they started putting the shoes together. And their little hands were so nimble and so fast, they did a great job in no time at all. And when they left, there was a whole pile of shoes there just waiting to be sold. The shoemaker looked at his wife and he said, we've got to do something for them, but what should we do? His wife looked at him and, being a very practical woman, said, they don't have any clothes. It gets cold. Why don't we make them some cold? I'll make them some clothes. You make them a little tiny pair of boots, and then at least they'll have something to keep them warm. And that's what they did. And Christmas Eve, instead of cutting out leather and putting it on the table, they left the little outfits, little pants and jacket and scarf and little boots. And then they waited and watched. And when the elves came this time, they looked around for their leather so they could work. They couldn't find any. But then they saw the clothes, and they started trying them on. And they were so excited. They were so happy. They were doing more jumping and yumping and rolling around and having a great time. And then they jumped up, jumped off of the table, and skidded away. And the family never saw them again. But that was okay, because those elves had definitely done a wonderful job for them, and they were able to pay them back Christmas Eve by giving them some clothes. That is a really old story that is one of the Grimm fairy tales, and it always makes me think of Harry Potter, because if you remember Dobby the elf, the house elves, if somebody gave them clothes, they were freed, and I think that's why our little shoemaker elves were freed.
What a great story. You've collected so many of these stories, and you should know as you listen that Mary Morgan Smith is not reading these stories. She's telling them. They're coming out of her her head and her mouth. That was Mary Morgan Smith, storyteller extraordinaire.